Airplane Intel Podcast, Episode 29. This week, we interview Art Billingsley, the pilot and owner of a 1974 Cessna 310Q. Together, we get the inside scoop on what it's like to own, maintain, and manage a piston twin. Then I share some ideas for getting more performance from your airplane. Plus, aircraft ownership news, Don's tip of the week, and your feedback.
Welcome to the Airplane Intel Podcast, the show for aircraft owners, pilots, and mechanics. It's our goal to save you money and make your flying safer so you can get the most out of your airplane. Featuring the pre-buy guys with over 60 years combined experience flying, maintaining, and managing all types of aircraft. We will share practical advice, strategies, and tips to help make aircraft ownership simple, safe, and cost-effective. So stay tuned.
Hey there, and welcome to another edition of the Airplane Intel Podcast. In case you're new to the show, we are a weekly aviation podcast that focuses on the ins and outs of aircraft ownership. We hope that by listening to this show, you make smarter and safer decisions when it comes to buying, maintaining, and managing your personal or business aircraft. I'm Adam, and I'm joined, as usual, by my co-host, Don. Hey, Don, how's it going today?
Well, hello there. Hey, we're back.
Yes, we are, and we're glad to be back, and we're glad that all of you are with us as well. We really appreciate it. We've got a lot planned for you today, so we're going to get right to it. But first, I wanted to mention a couple things real fast. First, we have a new patron. His name's Derek, and he has been generous enough to donate $1 per episode. So thank you so much, Derek. We really do appreciate it. Obviously, your contribution will be used wisely to help us keep the show going, as well as give you some rewards. For example, we've already posted some bonus audio content from today's episode that you'll want to check out, and we will be posting some more as the week goes on. So that is one of the things that you get by being a patron, and you can learn more about that, of course, by going to the show notes or by tapping the link in the show description of your podcast player. I also wanted to mention we included a video in the show notes of how to leave a rating and review for your favorite aviation podcast. Simply tap the image in the show notes that says leave a rating or review. And that's really cool because I know a lot of you guys might not know how to leave a rating and review, especially in iTunes. It's rather confusing, to be honest. And there's so many great aviation podcasts out there that are deserving of a rating and review. So we put a video, like I said, in the show notes showing you step by step exactly how to do it. So check that out when you get a chance. We've also got a new member to our Plane Partnership Program. And of course, as you may recall, the Plane Partnership Program is a database that we're putting together of planes and pilots. So if you're interested in purchasing an airplane and you think that maybe a co-ownership or partnership arrangement would be more economically beneficial for you, let us know. You can hit up the website planepartnership.com and fill out a short questionnaire and you will be put in the database. That part of it is free, of course. And if we are able to match you with a suitable partner, we can arrange that meeting for you and that would be a small fee for that. Now, the newest member, his name is Jack. He's in Boulder, Colorado, and he's looking for either a high-performance single or a light twin. He's not quite sure yet, but if you're interested in something like a 182, a 210, or a Bonanza, or a Baron, please let us know and we'll try to put you guys in touch with each other. Also, I am happy to say that we have gotten a lot of listener surveys recently this past week, and you can access that on the show notes as well as the show description and the podcast player. It's real easy. There's a few questions there and you know you don't have to answer all of them, just what you feel is necessary. And we've gotten a lot of positive feedback as well as some suggestions that we are definitely going to keep in mind and adopt going forward for sure. For example, one of you guys wants me to include true airspeeds, fuel burns, and common altitudes for the planes that we review. Now, that obviously is a good idea, and I do my best to put those numbers in. However, I don't have access to all the flight manuals, so that's not necessarily something that I'm going to be able to do exactly every time, but I will do my best to give you guys the best information that I have at hand for a majority of the airplanes that we cover, of course. So I appreciate that suggestion and will add it to my outline for when I do the research on these airplanes. Another one of you asked if we would have more guests on the show, and that is something that we are also going to be working on, trying to get a guest on the show at least once a month. I know that's extremely beneficial for all of us. I agree that that is something that we should do more of if possible. And the last comment I'll mention is that one of you guys asked if we would be able to put the cost per nautical mile to operate the airplane. And of course, like I said, I don't have all the data that I would need to do that accurately, but I will do my best. So anyway, thanks again for filling out the surveys and letting us know some of the things you'd like to see in future episodes. Again, we are going to take note and do our best to accommodate. And as I said, the link to the survey is in the podcast player show description as well as the show notes. So if you have a few minutes, we'd really appreciate if you would take the survey. Also, if there is an airplane or a topic that you'd like for us to cover, or you'd like to share your stories or experiences, we would love to hear from you as well. You can contact us through the website, airplaneintelpodcast.com, through social media by searching at PrebuyGuys, PrebuyGuys, all one word, or sending an email to feedback at airplaneintelpodcast.com. And speaking of guests, if you would like to be interviewed on the show as a pilot, as a mechanic, or an aircraft owner, we would be very happy to have you. So you can reach us and let us know through those channels as well. So that's about it for updates. Let's get to the news. And our first bit of news comes to us from AOPA, and it says Trio Autopilots now shipping. A non-TSO autopilot is now available for Part 23 airplanes and selling for $7,500 as a complete kit. It's now shipping to owners of Cessna 172, 175, and 182 models, with more Cessna and Piper models close behind. The STC Group was among the first of a growing number of companies taking advantage of recent FAA policy reforms that cleared the way for low-cost avionics and safety-enhancing equipment to be installed in Part 23 aircraft. The company secured a supplemental type certificate for the installation kits, which is listed on the company website, for $2,500 back in April. Now, in July, the company announced an STC that covers the servos and the autopilot unit itself. The Trio ProPilot, which is $5,000, was originally developed for experimental aircraft, but parts manufacturer approvals, or PMAs, have since been granted, clearing the way for the company to ship kits with all required parts. The company notes on its website that the STCs allowing ProPilot installation on the Cessna 180 and 177 models, as well as the Piper PA-28 and 32 series of airplanes, are expected later this month, with Cessna 200 models to be added to the STC list in October of this year, followed by another STC covering the Piper Comanche in November. Now, of course, the actual schedules for this is subject to change, but you can check out this article from AOPA as well as the links that are within the article by going to the Aircraft Ownership News section of the show notes. And our next article comes to us from General Aviation News, and it says ADS-B for $249. Seattle Avionics has introduced the Merlin, a two-channel ADS-B receiver with GPS and AHARS, for $249.99. Simply connect the included battery pack, connect your iPad to its wireless network, fire up the FlyQ EFB, and get weather and traffic on your iPad. Now, keep in mind, this is an ADS-B in solution, not an out solution. So this is something you would maybe add on to your ADS-B out, which is what is required for ADS-B in 2020. But this is a nice little feature that you can add for only $250, and it actually goes into a lot more detail regarding its integration with popular aviation apps such as FlyQ EFB and ForeFlight. And as I mentioned, it's ADS-B in, so it includes services such as FISBE, NEXRAD, NOTAMs, METARs, TAFs, and PIREPS, Winds Aloft, and other in-flight weather services. FISBE also includes information on temporary flight restrictions and special use airspace. And according to company officials, it takes less than a minute to connect the Merlin to your iPad. So this is definitely a cool little thing to check out if you are ready for ADS-B in. And a couple of the other features include a dual channel ADS-B in on both 978 megahertz, which is the universal access, as well as 1090 megahertz. And it also has an integrated WASP GPS. So for more on that, check out the show notes. And the last article I'm going to mention to you right now is from General Aviation News. And basically, if you were expecting or planning on getting an ADS-B out rebate from the FAA, don't even bother. According to the article, Monday, September 18th, 2017 is the last day general aviation pilots can reserve their $500 rebates to install ADS-B. Now, as you guys already know, starting January 1, 2020, airplanes must be equipped with ADS-B out to fly in most controlled airspace. Now, for the past year, the FAA has offered the rebate as an incentive to get GA aircraft owners to equip before September 18th. And I know we mentioned that a few times in recent episodes. So anyway, now you guys know that. So if you don't believe me, go ahead and check out the show notes and see the article for yourself. Now, there's actually two more articles I put in the show notes that I'm not going to read here, simply due to the time constraint that we're going to be on. We have this really great interview that I'm excited to play for you here shortly. And the articles, one is from General Aviation News, which talks about new certification rule for GA now in effect. And the other one is from AOPA, which is called The Right Thing to Do, and it's talking about pilot volunteers going down to the areas affected by Hurricanes Harvey and Irma. And if that's something that you are interested in helping out with, please check out the article in the show notes from the AOPA. So with that, let's get to our interview with Arthur Billingsley and his Cessna 310. Now, some of you might remember Arthur from episode 26, where he gave some insights about the Cessna Conquest. Now, he's going to tell us today all about his Cessna 310, but first let me give you a short background on Arthur. He's a former naval officer, an electrical and computer engineer, an enterprise IT consultant, photographer, and a pilot. He's an alum of Auburn University and the Naval Postgraduate School. He currently consults for a major IT firm in the Department of Defense marketplace. Now, Art began flying in 1979 after joining the Navy in Orlando, Florida at Showalter FBO. He's owned a Cessna 177RG Cardinal and currently owns this 1974 Cessna 310Q. Now, Arthur can be reached by email at arthur.billingsley@gmail.com. Now, I'll put all of Arthur's contact information, including his YouTube channel, which has a lot of cool videos on the 310, as well as his LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter accounts, into the show notes. Now, just so you guys know, this interview is actually a video that we're going to be posting later this week on YouTube and social media. So what you're about to hear is a little bit more condensed from the video version that we're going to be releasing soon. But you're going to definitely want to hear this as well as the video, because the video has a lot more stuff, including a cockpit tour and an airplane tour. So without further ado, here is the interview with Arthur Billingsley. I hope you guys enjoy it.
Hi, I'm Arthur Billingsley. I'm a resident of Jacksonville, Florida. And I live here in the area. And I fly this 310Q from Jacksonville up to Washington, D.C. every week. It's about a 600-mile nautical trip, and it takes me about 3.5 hours to get there, which is not really that bad, but I think I'd like to cut that time down, because in the course of a day, I go up on Monday mornings, I get there by 11 or 12, and by the time I'm in the office, it's about 1 to 1:30, and need to get started a little sooner than that. So that's one of the reasons for looking to perhaps do it a little faster. But about the 310Q, this is a 1974 310Q, 5,300 pounds gross weight, has about a 1,900 pound useful load, and full of fuel is about 600 to 700 pounds that you can fill it up with. And the range is about 6.5 hours with 160 gallons, 160 gallons in four tanks, and burns about 25 gallons per hour. You can get that down to 22 if you're so inclined, but I try not to run lean and a peak. So not to start one of those holy wars, I'm just running at rich a peak. So 25 gallons per hour gets you about 6.5 hours in this, and the range is right at about 1,000 to 1,100 miles if you were trying to just see how far you could get. Great airplane, love this airplane. Had it for about 5 years now. And before this airplane, I was tootling around in a 177RG. And the 177RG is a wonderful airplane as well. Burns about 11 gallons per hour, and you can get about 130 knots out of it. But the useful load is around 400 and some odd with a full fuel, which was 60 to 70 gallons, which would give you about 5 hours. I was in the 177RG because I was living in Charleston, South Carolina at the time, and flying up to Norfolk, Virginia, and also up to Washington, D.C., and over to Huntsville, Alabama. Retired Navy guy, and so I'm doing consulting back to the Department of Defense with a company called Oracle, and still doing that today. But being retired Navy means I go to all the Navy bases, Navy sites, as well as some of the other defense sites as well. And doing consulting. About this Q model, two Continental IO-470s, VOs, 260 horsepower per side, and again, they burn about 25 gallons total, 12 and a half gallons per side, so it's pretty economical. And as far as a light twin goes, the reason I went to this from the 177 was, one, I needed to carry more people, and two, I needed to go further. But the side benefit was, if I was going to a twin, I wanted to go to one of the safer twins. And so looking at the single engine performance of light twins, and the only two choices were Baron and the 310s, in terms of that had a great performance single engine, and the 310-1 in my case, because I looked at what was in it, and for the value, the 310 came up number one. The Cessna 310Q, in terms of range, about 1,000 miles you can go on these, 6.5 hours, and the speed is anywhere from 155 to 180 in general. You can get it up to about 185 knots. Generally at 8,000 feet, with you pulling about 22 inches of manifold and 2400 RPM, you can see about 175 to 180 knots, depending on the temperature. This is a normally aspirated, it's not turbo. So a little higher, you get better gas mileage. And I normally fly 8 to 10,000 feet, somewhere in there. I have done 12 to 14, but the speeds are slower and the gas use is slower. So you can even get down to 20 gallons per hour at about 14,000 feet, but you're only gonna be doing about 160, 165 knots or so, which is not bad. But I'm not looking to save gas. Or not save that much, I should say. As far as owning an airplane, I didn't know that I could even own an airplane. And this is coming from a military officer who's been flying a lot. General aviation was one of those things where I said, I'll just rent one and be done with it. But I started renting so much that it became a hassle, because every time you rent an airplane, you have to do not only a pre-flight, but a pre-pre-flight. That is, you have to schedule. You have to hope the schedule holds, hope the maintenance is good. Once you get there, you gotta find the keys. Hopefully they've left the keys. I mean, there was so much hope that every flight became one of these, I made it in the air. And that got to be a hassle. And so I started looking at what does it take to own an airplane? And it turns out it took about a year and a half or so of research to find out what it takes to own an airplane, only because I didn't go to some other owners first. I just did the research from scratch. That it's basically another car. And if you need another car for work, you can own another airplane, which is what I use this for. This is my commuter, and I commute in this, and I have a company that, of course, takes care of a lot of the expenses. And that's how I got into the first airplane, was for commuting. I was driving the car that I had at that time from Charleston, South Carolina, up to Norfolk, Virginia, which is about a 6.5-7 hour drive, and up to DC, which is about 9 to 10 hour drive in the car. And so I started looking at what does it take to actually fly, and it was a 2.5-3 hour flight and a 3 hour flight up to DC. So it became markedly better in terms of economics to fly. And with the Cessna 172, the 177s, and even the 182s to some respects, you could get around 58 to 62 cents a mile is what it would cost for the operational cost. That's not the all-in cost, but that's just the operational cost, which was right at where I needed to be to expense to clients and expense to folks that that I'm doing the work for. However, in owning your own airplane, there are some other things you got to take into account. One is insurance. Two is the maintenance, and you got to have a good maintenance team. And three is training. Those three things are what your support team becomes. You got to have regular training, you got to have regular maintenance, and you got to have insurance. And the insurance is important, because if anything does happen, you don't want this to be something that you take on board yourself. It's not that you have to have insurance, you can have just liability only, and that's cheaper. But that doesn't protect you in terms of making sure that your business can survive, or that you can continue to do your business or get to where you need to be. So include insurance when you're doing your calculations and the like. The training is important, because that's part of your safety factor. Being proficient is one thing, but there are some things that a good instructor can bring out or show you that you just don't get to do in everyday flying. One of the things that I do see, especially in flying the twin, about training, is that you can get into a mode of flying so normally that nothing ever really happens. And so you need some time to experience and go through these mental exercises of what if? What if you lose an engine, or the gear doesn't come down, or there's some other incident in air and you gotta think through it, rather than just pulling the checklist, which of course you can do, but there's some memory items that you wanna be sure to just be able to do right away. So training is an important part of owning your own airplane. The other part, number one part, is maintenance. The more you fly, the more maintenance you need. Generally, all the airplanes, whether it's single or twin, you're going to need 50-hour oil changes. So you want to calculate that in. Right now, I'm in the 300 club and flying some 300 hours a year, which is means I'm doing about 6 oil changes a year. Actually, it's 4 or 5 between annuals. Oil changes are good for a lot of reasons, but the main ones are this. Opening up the engine and being able to look at the oil. Absolutely, if you can do a survey on your oil, on oil analysis, it helps to show that there's any patterns developing or anything that's coming. The other thing that's useful is borescope. You don't have to do that on every oil change, but once a year, you want to get in and look at those cylinders to see if there's any trends developing, any burns that are irregular, anything that's looking a little different on the cylinders. With that, it's a great safety part because the guys that I've flown with who have regular maintenance, none of them have ever experienced an engine failure. Engine failures are rare, but they're rarer still when you make sure that you're doing some regular maintenance on the airplanes. The engines themselves, the design of these engines are from the 40s, and so they're older designs, they're well known, and they can take a beating, but you just have to stay on top of the maintenance because any little variances can cause some problems that develop into big problems. We call it the critical chain, or that chain of events that leads to an incident. And if you can stop those incidents back in pre-flight or maintenance or any kind of thing while you're on the ground, that's the time to do it. Have I ever done any owner assist annuals? Yes, I try to do owner assist annuals, and taking off the covers, the inspection plates, and certainly watching what some of the mechanics are doing in terms of looking in the engines and parts they're pulling away. The part that I don't do much of is when they pull out the seats and pull up the carpets and doing the interior, other than looking at the rods, cables, pulleys, things like that, making sure that they look reasonably good condition. Turning wrenches during owner assisted annuals, I haven't done much of that, other than I had an alternator that I needed to put a pulley belt on, and I did that. Put in spark plugs, I pulled off the fuel injectors and cleaned those, but nothing major where you're pulling off a cylinder or doing some torque tolerances to something like that. So on the cost of ownership, cost of owning an airplane, with the 172, which is pretty common, 172, 177, the insurance is going to be based on your number of hours and whether you are instrument rated or not. If you are just a private pilot and you have about 500 hours or less, the insurance is going to be around $1,200 a year. If you are private pilot, more than 500 hours and instrument rated, it's going to be about $800 a year. And that's for insurance for a 172, 177, something in that neighborhood. For the twins, they go up based on the airframe. The C310 is the entry level for the twins, and the insurance is going to be around $3,000 for a 500 hour pilot. If you're instrument rated and have about 800 hours or so, you'll get it down to $2,500 to $2,600, depending on the hull frame that you're covering it for. Generally, these are around $100,000 to $120,000. If you're carrying you know, 1 million plus the hull value, which is going to be about 120 or so, it's going to be around $2,500 to $3,000. If you are having a higher hull value, like around $200,000, it'll be about $3,500. So if you're interested in a 340, which is the next step up from this one, which is a pressurized cabin and turbo on the engines, that's going to be in the $4,000 range, and so on up, you know, with each one. 414, the Chancellor, that's going to be in the $4,500 range for insurance. And for the 421, which is the Golden Eagle, that's going to be right around $5,000 if you're paying about $400,000 for the airplane. It could be $5,000 to $6,000, but that's just to give you an idea of what it costs for insurance. As for maintenance, regular maintenance on the 172 can range, not including consumables like oil, your tires, and any of the other things that just normally deteriorate or have to be replaced, your regular maintenance is going to be around $800 to $2,000 a year for 172, 177, something in that neighborhood. The annual for 172, 177 is right around $1,500. And it could be $3,000 depending on how often or how detailed the annual is, because there are going to be some annuals where you have to catch up on maintenance. One of the things about general aviation that we both like and have to deal with is that we don't have scheduled maintenance as we do in turbines and jets, where there's a plan of scheduled maintenance and you know when it's going to happen. Well, we could do it in general aviation, but we just don't. So normally there's going to be an annual that you come in and you're going to have to do a catch up where you're going to have to replace alternators or magnetos or do a new starter or whatever. You're going to do one of those, and that's going to be around $5,000 for 172, 177, anything in that range. On the twins, the entry twins like this 310, you can expect your annual cost to be about $2,500 to $10,000 per annual. And the reason for that variance is there's more things that have to deal with. If you've gone through a few annuals and gotten through all of the detailed maintenance, you can expect about $3,000 to $4,000 for an annual. But they're not going to be cheap. So you factor that into your cost of ownership, just as the hangar costs, because you got to do it. You got to do it. What makes that cost variate so much, of course, is the twin engines, because you've got two of each, and they don't necessarily wear at the same rate, or cylinders don't have to be replaced at the same time. The tolerances are different on each engine in terms of being tight. Over time, even little variances in how the valves seat can cause wear patterns that are different on the different engines, and so they wear differently. And so you have to replace different parts at different times, and the cost goes up. Now, if you're doing owner-assisted, you can cut that cost by 20 to 40%, depending on what kind of annual it is. Opening the inspection plates, making sure that you take the cowlings off, just taking care of that kind of labor can cut your cost by 10 to 20%. And the other thing that can be a factor is if there's any heavy lift or a thing where there's lots of bolts to undo, or you have to write down all of where these bolts go, that saves you in labor as well. The going rate for labor at most of the shops around is $80 an hour. Some, if they're in the city, are around $100 to $120 an hour. And you can expect at least, like I said, about $3,000 in labor costs, and then about $2,000 in parts. Tires for the 310, for instance, the main tires are about $200 each. The front's about, it's about $200 also, it's $180. These are about $250, $220. And so you go through those, well, now that I'm flying 300 hours a year, I go through them every 2 years. So just the tires alone, that's $600 that I have to factor in. There's bearings, of course, with each one of those that you want the mechanics to look at. And the reason why I can't do a greater owner assist is because I'm not an AP like Adam is. So being able to look at different parts and tell if they're wearing, if they're okay, knowing what to look for, that's the experience that you're paying for. And it's worthwhile experience to pay for. The reason that you want to use mechanics, so that they sign off and say, yes, we've looked at the parts and we don't see any deterioration or any problems here. The last annual I did, I went as they were pulling out some of the panels on the interior, we saw some problems with the aluminum. And I was able to take those panels out, scrub them down, clean them off, abate the rust or corrosion, is what I'm trying to say. Couldn't think of the word. It's an age thing. Corrosion, I was able to abate that, and so now it's good. And it's one of those things that, why wasn't it caught at a previous annual? The answer is, I don't know. Either I wasn't looking or the mechanic wasn't looking. So while I like going to one mechanic all the time, it is good to have another mechanic that you trust look at your parts and planes and whatever, because you get a different set of eyes on it. For cost of ownership, for this 310, The cost was $100,000 for the plane. And generally they're still running $80,000 to $120,000 for a good airframe. This has about 5,000 hours total time on it. The engines are close to TBO, but I'm a Mike Bush guy, so I'm going to run them until I see some problems with them. The cost of ownership is this. You factor in the cost for your maintenance, for your insurance, for your training, and then the cost of operation, and then the cost to have the actual airplane, which is, in my case, I took out a loan for this airplane, so I'm paying a cost every month for having the airplane, and then I'm paying a hangar cost. All told, what those look like, it's about $1,000 a month to own, and the hangar is about $310 per month. The insurance is about $2,400 for me, and I'm a 1,500-hour pilot with a instrument. The training cost is roughly about $400 to $500 per year. The maintenance costs, I figure $8,000 to $12,000 per year, and some years it's going to spike. I just had the boots done on the back here, and those boots were $7,000. The boots up front here are going to be right at $10,000, and you can see where they've been patched over the years, and it's going to take time. By the way, I should say this is 74C310Q, and I've got a 5-year restoration plan that I started this year, which is why I started on the boots. I'm going to do the boots up here, and then I've got to do the engines in the next 2 years, and then the paint and interior. And so it's going to take about another 4 years to get through all of that. But as I was saying, the boots here are going to be right around $10,000, probably a little less. Cost is about $7,000 to $8,000, and the labor is about right at $1,000 or so. So ownership cost, let's look at the cost again. So $1,000 for having the plane, that's per month, and I guess we should break it down per month. The cost of insurance is going to be about $200 per month, so it puts us at $1,200. The cost for maintenance is right around $500 per month, so we're at $17. Training, about $50, and the hangar space is $320 per month, and then the cost of operation. So it's right at $2,100 per month to operate this airplane. The cost is 25 gallons per hour to operate it, and 25 gallons per hour at $4 a gallon is $100. So $100 an hour, and I'm flying about 30, sometimes 30, actually it's less, 20 to 30 hours per month. So that's roughly $2,000 there in operations cost. So $4,000 to $6,000 per month. So is the use of the airplane worth the investment of the $4,000, $6,000? Yes, absolutely. My alternative is this. The reason I've been using general aviation for commuting is because I tried and still do use civil aviation, that is going on the commercial airlines. But here's the kicker. Even in the 3.5 hours to fly from Jacksonville to DC, I still beat the airlines. And that's because I don't wait in line for security. I don't have to check bags. I don't have to go and get my car. The car is brought out to the airplane. The rental car is brought out to the airplane, so I don't have to go to get that. And then there's the time of getting through the terminal and waiting in line for different things and whatnot. You don't do any of that. So my time to get to DC from Jacksonville, I still beat in this General Aviation 310, even though it's a 3.5 hour flight. The flight for commercial aviation is about 1.5 to 2 hours. And you tack on to that the security, waiting in line, and others. General aviation beats commercial aviation when you are a certain distance. And that distance is right at 400 to maybe 800 miles away from your target. I go out to San Diego often, probably 2 or 3 times a year, and that's not real often, but often enough that I want to fly out there, but it's a 9 to 11 hour flight in the 310. So that's a flight that civil aviation or commercial aviation is going to meet, is going to beat general aviation. So I don't try that. But in terms of commuting, general aviation can beat commercial aviation for ranges of 100 to 600 easily, 100 mile radius. Even in the Cessna 177 RG, I was able to beat the commercial guys rather than having to take commercial aviation. Door to door, in general aviation, I've been able to beat the commercial guys consistently for the past 5 years. So in this Cessna 310Q, I've got 530 WAS, 430 regular, a 696 that's panel mounted, an Aspen 1000 PFD, and a Stratus 2. And that's the basics. Now for the engine, I've got a EDM 760 for monitoring the engine and each cylinder, and a Shaden fuel flow for looking at totalizing fuel. All those are tied in via the RS-232 bus into the GPS and into the Aspen. And I put in a FlightStream 210 a couple of years ago, and so now that connects to the iPad. And this was probably the best modification I have made in the years, has been that FlightStream 210. And the reason for that is, if you had a Garmin 530 or 430 and you got either waypoints or Victor Airways or some other thing that you couldn't find easily on the unit, now you don't have to worry about it. You just put it in your iPad and push the send button, whether you're using Garmin Pilot or 4Flight, and it's taken care of. And it cross fills across the Aspen, the Garmin, the 696. It does not cross fill into the 430 because it's not a WAS unit, and so WAS and non-WAS won't talk to each other. Thanks, Garmin. Even though they should, but that's one of the things that I've added that I really like was the FlightStream 210. There's now the FlightStream 510 that comes with the that comes for the units like the 1000 and 3000, but the 210, if you have a Garmin unit, Garmin GPS, and you want to be able to interact with your iPad, it's $900 or so, well worth it. The installation cost was a couple hundred dollars, so about $1,100 all in to get that installed, and yeah, I'd pay it again. It's been worth that. Because even on reroutes, if you're doing a lot of IFR flying and you're in the air and you invariably get the call from the controller that says, hey, we got a reroute for you, when you're ready to copy, you're able to punch it in and send it to the panel, no problem. For ADS-B, about 2 years ago, I decided to go ahead and take care of that. So when I did the FlightStream 210, I went ahead and sent my 330ES back in to be upgraded for ADS-B out. And so this plane is now ADS-B out compliant, 2020 compliant. I do not have ADS-B in except through the Stratus 2, and that's one of the upgrades I plan on doing when I do the 430 WAS. I'm going to get ADS-B in either by doing a 345, a Garmin 345, or maybe a GDL 88 or something. I'll put something in to get into the plane. Right now with the 696, the Garmin 696, I do get weather via Sirius. And so I hadn't been stressed that much. And I also get weather, of course, on the iPad via the Stratus 2.
Well, thank you, Arthur, again for taking the time to share with us all the great and valuable information about the 310 and aircraft ownership in general. We really do appreciate it, and I hope all of you guys out there enjoyed it as much as we did. And as I mentioned, we'll be putting a more detailed video on this interview and the airplane into YouTube shortly. And of course, our patrons will get the early access to that as well. And I put all of Arthur's contact information, if you wanted to ask him some questions about the 310, into the show notes. So now Don's going to tell us about the 310s that are for sale.
Well, thanks, Adam, for that information. So let's see what's out there for sale. Well, let's see. There's 16 of them in a controller, and he plays from $210,000 for a 1979 310R model to $33,900 for a 1961 with high time engines. There's 25 of them in trader plane. And there's five of them that are less than 40,000, and it goes all the way up to 214,000. Some of these, a few of those airplanes are overseas. So let's look at this 1973 Q model for $94,900. Hey, it's right here in North Carolina. It's got 230 hours since major overhaul and 68 hours on new heated propellers. And let's see, oops, it had a gear up landing in 2007 and a few other 337 repairs. Well, these 44-year-old airplanes carry a lot of history, but it's condition, condition, condition. That's what counts. So this airplane has 4,920 hours total time on the airframe. It's got the ISO boots and alcohol windshield, and he says the paint's a 7 on a scale of 10, and the interior is a 6. It has a FCS 810 flight management system, and it has a 430. It's not a WASP 430, and it has 162 gallons of fuel and 1,560 pounds of useful load. Then there's a 310R2, the second version, and that's in trader plane. And let's see, in trader plane they have, 65,000 airplanes for 1,712 hours since major overhaul and dated at avionics to 145,000. Okay, this 145,000 is that R2 I was telling you about. And it's got the Coleman Bearcat conversion. I'm going to talk to you about that in a little bit. It's a 1979 R2, 4,405 hours, 1,050 since major overhaul. It does have dated avionics. And there was a report of a gear up landing also in the year 2011. Well, condition, condition, condition. Yep. So in late 1987, the Coleman conversion kind of went out of business and they had to flood at the factory. But then again, it was taken over by another company and they're still in business. So it's the A model conversion is a Continental IO550 engine, and that increased the horsepower to 300 horsepower, and just like the current STC conversion. Okay, so anyway, back then, with the demise, these STCs effectively ceased to exist, so make sure you get one, the STC document and the paperwork that goes with it. And but if you can't get one, you might be able to go through the Mike Jones. He's the new owner of the STC. And he has the Bearcat 1 and 2 STCs. And there's a list of changes involved there. He has the remanufactured IO550 300 horsepower 1900 TBO engines and alternators and Shaden digital fuel computers and new vacuum pumps and starter motors and wood mounts, the vibration mounts on the motor mounts, and new fuel and oil hoses. But they do use the existing props. And what does this do for the airplane? Well, it makes it climb at 1,900 feet a minute, and it cruises at 196 knots. But the single engine climb is raised to 450 feet a minute, and the service ceiling is raised to 10,000 feet. So what's the deal with major damage history? Well, it does reduce the resale value and some interested buyers. But to me, it's all about on condition. That's the value. As the damage repair gets further back into the airplane history, it becomes less objectionable. Paying less for the airplane is money not spent. It has a value. for those aviators who put their monies to work. I'm going to tell you more about some more stories about the 310 Q&R in the after show. So keep listening for that.
You've got mail.
Yes, we do, and it's always great to hear from you guys, so we really appreciate it. Jeff wrote us saying, "Hey, I hope you and everyone else fared well in Florida. I actually will be flying my Saratoga with Operation Airdrop this weekend, helping take supplies all over Florida. Thanks for making a great quality and informative show each week. Keep up the great work." Well, Jeff, thanks so much for writing, and actually I communicated with Jeff a couple times through email through the past week or so. And he's going down to Florida to help out with all the humanitarian efforts that are necessary in Florida following Hurricane Irma. And I think that is such a neat thing to do. How cool is that? Using your airplane to do good for the world. And that's something that you don't hear very much in the news these days. But I will say, and I'm happy to say, that I've heard a lot of great stories of other pilots doing the same thing in Texas and Florida and in the Caribbean. And wow, that is just a really neat thing to do. And of course, if you guys are interested in doing something like that as well, you can visit operation-airdrop.com. We also got some mail from Jack. He said, "It would also be great if you included links to the aircraft for sale that Don mentions and not just the search links on controller. For instance, it would have been great if your show notes could have included the link on the Piper Aero in Colorado," he said, had a YouTube video. So Jack, thank you for that feedback. We do appreciate it. Now, Jack also filled out the listener survey, and this was kind of a follow-up. And I think it's a great idea, and I don't know why I didn't think of it before, but from now on, including this episode, the airplanes that Don covers for Aircraft for Sale, the direct links, will be put into the show notes as a featured aircraft under the aircraft's links. So you can check those out whenever you get a chance. Don, did you have some feedback for us?
Well, Adam, I do have some feedback. We got some feedback from Aaron, and thanks, Aaron, for sending that feedback. But Aaron is wondering about our last episode, episode 28, the Piper Arrow airplane. He mentioned about the possibility of spar corrosion, that service bulletin 1006, and also the Merlin wastegate problems the airplane had. So, well, all I could say is there's a lot of directives and information about these 30, 40, 50-year-old airplanes. We can't cover all the items, but, you know, basically about the wing spar corrosion issue, yes, if they did that service bulletin, that's a very positive to the airplane. I wish I had some more feedback on that from other people in the field out there. The FAA, I believe, originally issued an AD on it many years ago, and they only found that one airplane that the spar failed on. And all the other airplanes that were complied with the AD, they couldn't find any corrosion of the spar. So they rescinded the AD, but just kept the service bulletin. And I got some mixed reactions about the service bulletin. Some people say there was only one or two out of the thousands and thousands of PA-28s and PA-32s out there. It wasn't that bad to, you know, to issue a new AD on. And then I've seen other articles saying there was a few that they found spar corrosion. So it's just part of the puzzle, Aaron. We don't want to discourage people from buying an airplane because of one problem that probably isn't there. I think there's only like one, maybe as little as one out of every 5,000 or 6,000. I'm not sure what the exact numbers is. I mean, it's a good thing if you had two airplanes that are exactly the same and one had the service bulletin 1006 complied with. Yeah, I mean, it would put it ahead of the other one. But it's just part of the puzzle, and that's what we do. Give you advice and let you make the choice. As far as the wastegate, that's another thing, too. So if we went into every defect on every airplane, we'd be many, many hours during the program. We find all kinds of unusual things in the pre-buy and we just go ahead and bring it to the attention of the customer. And he's got to make his choice on what's important to him, and whether or not he should buy the airplane with all the known facts, or which airplane he should buy. There's no perfect one out there. They all have defects, and that's what we do, book for defects. So thanks, Aaron, for writing in that feedback. And if anybody else has any information out there about this Service Bulletin 1006, as far as how many people have found corrosion of the spar, we'd be happy to hear about it. Just drop us an email.
Yeah, that's right, Don. And if any of you guys have any information or follow-up or even corrections to anything that we talk about on the show, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. And of course, you can send an email to feedback@airplaneintelpodcast.com. Now, before we get to the tip of the week, I have a little bit of a mini tip of the week, I guess, and it's some feedback that I have from a colleague of mine that was working on a high-performance single-engine airplane, and the aircraft was not making maximum RPM. So that got me thinking. A lot of you out there might be flying older airplanes, and of course, that means that your aircraft may not be performing to book value. But I thought it would be interesting to kind of talk about four things you can do to ensure that your airplane gets the most performance and speed that you possibly can. So the first thing I'm going to mention is quite obvious to most of you, I'm sure, but that is to keep your airplane clean. That means washing it and waxing it on a regular and consistent basis. And doing that, you'd be surprised how much extra speed and efficiency as far as fuel flow and such that you can see just by doing that. The second thing that you can do that's actually quite simple and something you can do on your own is to make sure that your tires are properly inflated. It's possible that if your tires are underinflated, you will be missing the mark in terms of takeoff roll distance. So check your POH or maintenance manual to see exactly how much PSI should be in those tires. Not only will that help with the performance end of the takeoff, it will also save you some money because you won't be going through tires nearly as fast. Now, the third thing I'd like to mention, which seems quite obvious as well, is to get an engine tune-up. And that means different things for different airplanes, of course, but you can talk to your mechanic and see what you can do to make sure your engine is running properly. And what that often has to do with is things like spark plugs and magnetos, as well as cleaning the fuel injectors. So that is something you can have done to the airplane. It won't cost you very much money, and you'd be surprised at how much better the airplane actually performs. And the last thing I'd like to mention, which actually turned out to be the issue that my friend was having, is you want to make sure that the rigging on your engine controls are within spec. And what was happening on this airplane was the propeller control was actually bottoming out and hitting the panel before reaching its maximum travel. And what that did is make the RPM not go to maximum power. And so that's a simple adjustment. It's a cable and pulley type system. And so you can have your mechanic make sure that you are not bottoming out any of your engine controls. And that includes your throttle, your mixture, and your prop control, as well as other controls in the airplane that are push-pull type knobs, such as alternate air and carb heat and things like that. Because basically, you should be able to have full travel on all those knobs and levers, and they should not be touching either the throttle quadrant or the panel. There should be a gap there. The amount of gap will vary depending on the airplane you're flying, but that is something you can look for. You can check yourself to see if all of your knobs are making full travel or not. But anyway, those are four tips that I'd like to share with you. And I put a summary of those tips into the show notes so you can check those out. Now it's time for Don's tip of the week.
It's time for the tip of the week.
Well, here's my tip of the episode. We're going to talk about your aircraft electrical system, in particularly your alternator. Yes, your alternator's going to charge that battery. But what happens if you have an almost dead battery and you've got to get a boost, an external power boost? Well, in a lot of cases, people leave their alternators off because it might say that in your operating instructions in your flight manual, pilot operating handbook. But what happens is the engine starts really good. You got all that juice coming from outside. And after it starts, you go ahead and flip on the alternator switch. And it seems like your avionics lights up, but you didn't notice your amp meter and your voltage meter. is low, it's not charging. So this could be a dangerous situation, especially if you're taking off in IFR weather or at nighttime. So what do you do? Well, after the engine starts, and as it's still plugged in, you have plenty of juice for the alternator to get excited. And once it's excited, it starts putting out the amperage that it's supposed to. And the other problem is that if your battery is really weak, the alternator in some cases might be putting a lot of amps into that battery, and the battery might be really heating up and you're straining the alternator. So that's not good either. But what you can do is you could actually charge the battery. Yeah, I know it's a pain, you gotta wait a while, but if you give it at least a half charge, it will be a lot easier on the equipment. Now, Dean Showalter, Airplane Owner's Maintenance, last week came out with episode number 69, all about troubleshooting electrical systems, and he gets into that alternator. So if you're an airplane owner, you've got to listen to that part of Dean Showalter's show where he tells you about troubleshooting the electrical system so you're not buying things that aren't broken. You don't want to do that. And also, if you're an aircraft maintenance technician, Dean really gets into it. Yeah, he gets pretty deep into this electrical system. So you're going to have to listen to that episode 69 and learn how to troubleshoot an alternator without hardly any tools at all. So we're going to put a link in our show notes to Dean's episode 69, and I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, that's right, Don. And I actually just listened to episode 69 of the Airplane Owner Maintenance Podcast, and it's definitely worth the listen, especially if you're interested in aircraft charging systems and alternators and troubleshooting, which is a skill in and of itself. And I think all of you out there are going to really appreciate it, whether you're an owner or a mechanic or just an enthusiast. You're definitely going to learn a few things. And as Don mentioned, we put a direct link to that episode into the show notes. Well, everyone, on that note, we're going to wrap it up right here. We appreciate you being with us and listening to us talk about airplanes for the last hour or so. You guys really do make this podcast really fun and worthwhile, and we are so happy to have you guys here. Please share the word with your fellow pilots and aircraft owners and maintenance technicians about this podcast. We would really love to have more of you guys in the community so we can continue to learn from each other. And please don't forget about the listener surveys that are now available in the show notes and in the link in the podcast player. We really do value your feedback. And also don't forget about the video that we'll be posting on YouTube in the very near future with Arthur's 1974 Cessna 310Q. So guys, again, thanks for being here. Now Don's going to stick around and do an after show for you that you're not going to want to miss. So if you want some more, you've come to the right place. But that's all for me. Keep the greasy side down and stay safe, everyone. Are you still here? The conversation continues at the after show starting right now.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the 310s. Yeah, the 310Q, boy, that was the first airplane. First twin engine rating I got was on a 310Q. And boy, it was quite an airplane. I'll tell you, I loved it. It looked great on the ramp. I mean, just sleek looking airplane. So I was 135 operator back then. And of course I had to take a check ride, you know, with the FAA to get the plane on the certificate. And let me see, what was it? Oh yeah, anyway, that was a long time ago. And anyway, you're not really supposed to pull back on the throttle and let that engine idle. It's not good for the engine because you unload the pistons of pressure and they become vacuum pumps. And that's not good for the rings because the pistons could slop around inside the cylinders. And sure enough, that's what had to happen to demonstrate an engine out. And BMC, maneuvers. And I got back to home base, and yep, we had a weak cylinder. We had a crack ring. And so on these twin-engine airplanes, it's good to simulate an engine out, you know, by letting the engine cool slowly by, you know, bringing back the power gradually. And then when the cylinder temperatures go down, you might even consider feathering an engine if you have enough altitude and doing your maneuvers over an airport. And anyway, and then when you start it up again, you need to leave kind of the power low again, but enough to be pulling the airplane so the pistons aren't slopping around in air. And that's the way I did it many years ago. And because the 310R, it had some nice experiences in that also. And on the after show, I'm going to kind of talk about that a little more. And landing in the mountains on a short downhill runway. No choice. You had to land downhill because in front of you and all around you, there was mountains. So you folks in the Patreon, listen in and hope you enjoy those stories. So for now, be signing off. Have a good day.
Thanks for listening to the Airplane Intel Podcast. If you like what you just heard, we hope that you'll subscribe to the show and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter by searching Pre-Buy Guys. To access show notes, archives, and other free resources, head on over to AirplaneIntelPodcast.com. To get answers to your questions, drop us a line on social media or send an email to feedback@AirplaneIntelPodcast.com. You can also reach us by phone at 904-290-3870. And remember, owning an airplane doesn't have to be hazardous to your wealth.